And our guest Joe Nickel has graciously agreed to stick around for another final hour here as we take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to our final hour with Joe Nickel. I'll have open lines for you next hour here on Coast to Coast. Joe, thanks for staying an extra hour. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm having fun.
You are. You've got as much energy now as you did when we started this thing.
I love what I do. I really find it interesting subject matter, and I'm always looking for something new. And as Bob Gilman says, I could be wrong. So,
have you been embroiled sometimes with people who are ultra religious because of your views?
Oh yes, and maybe no matter more than the Shroud of Turin. I wrote my first book mm-hmm. on that, and you know, it's I have people that just feel sorry for me, and the good ones say they'll pray for me.
Tell me, you did not conclude that the shroud was not Jesus?
Well, it's Jesus, only it's a fake shroud. You know, the shroud's a complex issue, but I can give you a very quick few points. The Gospel of John in the New Testament, the other Gospels just have mentioned vaguely a shroud, you know. But the Gospel of John has some specificity and says Jesus was buried as the manner of the Jews is to bury, and we know what that is. And he goes on to say, describe multiple cloths, folding and tying and binding and so forth, and he talks about 100-pound weight of the spices, myrrh and aloes and so forth. Needless to say, perhaps the body of on the Shroud of Turin was not washed. There are blood stains all over the back and arms, so it's not a ritual Jewish burial. There's not a speck of burial spices on it. There's a single cloth rather than multiple cloths, the separate cloth, the napkin over the face. All of this is, and I say this to atheists as well, it's not a matter of that I'm buying into the gospel account. I'm just saying that if the gospels mean anything, that's they're citing Jewish burial practice, and that's what we can go to for our logic. So the Shroud of Turin really doesn't get to first base there. Then it gets worse. For 1,300 years, there was no Shroud of Turin. There were 40 different fake shrouds. At least 39 of them had to be fake. And then, so where was this? And then it shows up under suspicious circumstances in a village in north central France. And the bishop, a bishop, wrote to Pope Clement saying, "Holy Father, my predecessor," and he tells the story, and he says they were hiring people to pretend they were sick, and then they would unveil this fake shroud, and then they would pretend they were cured. And he said, so that, this is a quote, money might be cunningly wrung from the pockets of unsuspecting pilgrims. Hmm. And goes on to say that the artist who made this, that cunningly painted it, had confessed. And so then it remains for the modern era to see that the blood stains are suspiciously still bright red. It failed forensic examinations for blood speciation and peroxidase activity, all the blood tests. And the Macron laboratory found that it consisted of red ochre and vermilion in a tempera binder, and that there were paint particles all over the image. And finally, we can guess whether the radiocarbon dating, did it date to the time of Christ, the time of the forger's confession, or, say, Washington's birthday? I mean, and of course, it was
interesting work.
Almost to the month.
We're going to get you back to talk more about that. Would you debate Shroud proponents on the show?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, yes, have many times.
Let's think about that. All right, let's go to
they
Harry.
They get the worst end of it, but if they're willing.
Here's the promised hour now of calls. Harry in Phoenix, first-time caller. Harry, go for it.
Hey, George, yeah, first-time caller. Pleasure to speak with
Good.
You, Mr. Nickel.
Thanks, Harry.
Now, just so you know, I'm an educated man. As an undergrad at ASU, I got published or co-published in the North American Journal of Mycology. So
cool.
I look at everything from a very scientific, analytical point of view. So in 1997, I'm living in Phoenix. I'm running a restaurant that is right on the I-17. And one of my waitresses came running in to the office saying, Harry, you got to come out here. There's a UFO. Everybody's looking at a UFO outside. I'm like, whatever, get out of here. And I look up at the cameras, and I can see customers walking out the door. I'm like, what the heck's going on? So I go walking out, and I look up into the sky. And now, I'm a Marine Corps veteran, so I have seen more than my share of helicopters. I have been on the ground doing landing assists with them. And I look up, and I see a V of lights, the V formation. And there's, you know, people saying, oh, it's, you know, it's a group of helicopters and this and that. And as I'm looking up, I'm like, no, that is not helicopters, because you couldn't hear anything, no engine or anything. But what really got me and what got everybody thinking was that I looked up and noticed that all around it, you could see stars. And this thing was very, very slowly moving. I mean, it must have been maybe a couple football fields long. As it was moving, it would start to block out the stars. And I says, look at the stars. You could see stars all around it, but you don't see any stars in the middle. That is one craft. And I don't just like grasp at straws, you know, and just make guess judgments like that. But this was clearly one big craft, because as it was moving, it would continue to block other stars out of light as it moved along. And
no film of this, right?
No film of that. I mean, I don't even think.
Well here's the
not
problem.
A lot of cell phones even had cameras or stuff like that on them.
Here's the problem. I'm with you. I'm convinced you saw something, but we don't know what it is, and we don't have any evidence. The matter, it would be said in a court of law, the matter is not before the court. So we don't have any evidence. We have your sighting, but it's to be kind, it's not evidence of anything. It's just what you think you saw, and eyewitnesses will swear to things that are not accurate, and people are fooled by what they've seen. When you say something with such and such a size, as far as UFOs go, that's really, you can't do that, because when you're looking at something in the sky and you don't know one of the factors, you don't know how big it is, you don't know how far away it is, you don't know how high it is, you have no frame of reference, you have multiple, you're just making multiple assumptions. If you knew what size it was, you could estimate how far away it is. But if you don't know any of the factors, it's just an impression. And I find this with monsters, for example, people describing Mothman, for example. And the Mothman, the description of Mothman is exactly like a barred owl with those crimson bicycle reflector-like red eyeshine eyes, and exactly like that. In fact, there are barred owls all in that. I've been all through that area and know that well, and really worked on this a lot. The only difference is that people are saying that Mothman was bigger, and they're just guesstimating something that's frightening at an unknown distance, and they're telling you how tall it was. But Mothman didn't hold up a yardstick, and so I think it was a barred owl. It's interesting to me.
A big one, right?
Yeah, well, and a big one. It is a big owl. But that it was man-sized is highly unlikely. But if that's correct and it's an extraterrestrial creature, isn't it interesting that they exactly look like barred owls? You say, well, see how clever the extraterrestrials are. They've taken that form to fool Earthlings. Well, but then why don't they get the size right? So I'm rambling a bit, but I have to say that people see something in the sky. There are stealth helicopters, we know now, don't make a lot of noise. Maybe you saw a patch of sky where there were no stars. I don't know. Maybe there was a cloud blocking out some. It's very difficult to see something under sort of exciting conditions briefly, and then you get a mental image, and later you remember things that maybe aren't quite accurate, and the more you tell the story, the more it kind of changes but becomes sharper, the errors become sharper and more believable. So I don't know what it was. We're going to have something more than countless, every year, countless UFO reports, of which I would say the least likely explanation for any of them is that it's an extraterrestrial craft.
Joe, would you say that we may possess, we as a nation, incredible technology that is not public, and maybe they're seeing things like that?
Well, I think that we probably have seen that some of the things that people are reporting as flying saucers. I mean, even if you go back to the Roswell incident, and no, that wasn't a weather balloon, it was a spy balloon. And so it was, our secret government at work trying to monitor Soviet nuclear tests, and they lost one of those balloon arrays in the direction of Mac Brazel's ranch, and the rest, I think we know, the foiled paper, sticks, tape, and rubber, pretty much the description of one of these balloon arrays. So I just think that our government does have, the Phoenix Lights is not so much a secret or anything, but it was government doing Air Force flare drop experiments. We have really, I had a case that I'm hesitant to say much about, but was probably one of our helicopters, like was used at to get Osama bin Laden, the captured one.
Yeah.
And we didn't know about that, did we?
Until
one of those wrecked, and they were kind of, as I understand it, kind of a muffled, were made to muffle the sound. So how much mischief those have caused, I don't know. But I'm not quick to buy into any kind of great, large conspiracy or any big scenario of anything unless we're forced there. And I think that most of these sightings, if we work at them and if they got the attention, could be explained as to being probably such and such. But we're flooded with these UFO cases. I don't have time to run them all down, but none of them sound to me like extraterrestrial craft.
Let's go to Mac in Joplin, Missouri now, Wild Card Line. Good morning, Mac. Welcome to the show. Mac? Well,
Mac has been abducted.
Mac
by
has
aliens.
Been taken away. You never
it
know.
Finally happened.
Let's try.
On your show, live
on my program, John in Sebring, Florida. Go ahead, John.
Oh, it's great to be with you too, Joe. I had a question that George really took care of a little while ago. I just want to share a little humor with you concerning atheists. One fellow said, "I'm an atheist, thank God," and. A better one is a dyslexic insomniac atheist. See, and you have to recall that the word dog spelled backwards is God. He laid awake all night contemplating, is it really a dog? All right. I'll give a triangle question to Joe.
All right. Go ahead.
I've heard all Joe said the past couple hours. It's wonderful to have you on there, Joe. What religion were you raised, and also your parents? What religion were they raised, and if you're married, what kind of wedding did you have, and what religion are you raising your children?
Well, you're getting into very personal areas. I'll just say for myself, I was raised a Protestant in the Disciples of Christ religion. And Christian religion, Protestant, and I didn't have children until I discovered in 2003 I found a daughter I didn't know I had, but that's a long story and probably irrelevant here, but it changed my life.
Indeed it is. So, Joe, what are your next projects? What are you working on?
Well, I'm always working on something, and I don't usually telegraph it on national shows because of the interference that I get. I made that mistake a time or two, only to find that people were trying to beat me to the punch or get ahead of me or mess up my evidence or call and alert people I was coming or what have you. So I just quit doing that. But in broad brushstrokes, I just continue. I'm looking at certainly more miracle claims. I'm looking at Bigfoot continually and other monster cryptozoological claims, trying to explain them within the natural world, and so on. I'm doing a number of pieces on true crime and the paranormal, where I'm taking crime cases, like one that I published in our magazine on John Dillinger, on Dillinger's ghost, but I use it as a sort of excuse to talk about a gangster's career and about the G-man Melvin Purvis of the FBI who brought Dillinger down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I use that. What I like about it is that the ghost story was that Dillinger would be seen running down the alley, reaching for his gun, and then he would disappear. And there were all these stories. And I found out by reading Melvin Purvis's autobiography and going back into the case, Dillinger never ran down the alley. Everybody thinks he did after he came out of the theater and the FBI was following him, and he never ran. He quickened his pace, reached for his gun, and they shot him dead, and he fell with maybe his head into the alley. But so the whole idea of him running down the alley is not true, and therefore, really, these ghost stories are not true. They don't make any sense, and if you could have to apologize for them, well, maybe after death he decided he should have run down the alley, so that's what the ghost does, then you leave me, because as a detective, I don't have time for that kind of excuse-making. But that's an area that I'm finding very profitable to look at, some of these true crime. And I'm just back from Australia and New Zealand, where I looked into the Yowie, which is their version of Bigfoot. The new issue of Skeptical Inquirer has my work on the Tower Mill ghost, a hanged ghost at Tower Mill.
And you still remain skeptical after coming back from Down Under?
I saw that. But, once I got my balance, once I got back upright from Down Under, I recovered. And New Zealand, you know, the myth, I think, of the giant bird, the moa, the sort of...
We call them thunderbirds.
Yeah. The ostrich-like moa, which became extinct. The native peoples killed and ate those. But people are seeing them, and we're not sure what they see, but they're seeing a small variety, and it could just be that they're seeing an Australian emu.
Amazing wonders of the planet. Joe, we're going to come back in a moment and take final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. We will have open lines next hour, and we'll have final calls with Joe Nickel when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Now it's time, though, for our weekly shout out to those of you who listen to Coast on our 615 radio stations across North America. Hello there, Coast Insiders. Thank you. And then those who listen to us on Sirius XM Talk Channel 146. How about the various chat rooms out there? Fantastic Forum 2, Into Infinity, The Imaginative World Folks, Sorcery, IRC, The Guy from Pittsburgh. Those who follow us on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, Yahoo Chat, ParanormalDate.com, the Hollywood Ghost Hunters are going to be on pretty soon, and our buddy Greg the Cook in St. Louis. Thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Joe Nickel with us. We'll get to your calls. Let's start taking some of them now. Jan in Brooklyn, welcome to the program. Hi, Jan.
Oh, hi, hi.
Hi.
So I got something like unbelievable. If you don't believe this, I don't know. I hope your head doesn't fall out.
Well, tell us. Tell us.
I have, like, three things, but the first one is probably the best.
All right, go for it.
I went to Eddie Casey in New York City, and they had a workshop there. And the guy had a special camera to pick up entity stuff from people. There was about 15 people in the group. and he took 3 pictures of me. And one picture looked like completely normal, and the other 2 pictures, you could recognize my face and everything. You could recognize my clothes. It was a little bit hazy. I mean, you got the pictures right away, so there was no doctoring. Anyhow, one of the pictures, I was wearing glasses, and my feet weren't even on the ground. And I don't wear glasses. And also, another thing, I went to, I had a lot of problems. So I woke up, and my foot was paralyzed, and I had pain that it wasn't human pain. And I just wish, just for 1 minute, that you would have this pain, Joe, so then you would experience something abnormal. You know, it's like, I mean, I really feel I would have gotten a heart attack or a stroke if luckily I got rid of it in 5 minutes. And another time, for a couple of years, heels got rid of it. My part of my body would burn in ice cold weather. And I heard that's like demonic entity stuff. So what do you say about all these things, Joe?
Well, for your body conditions, go to your doctor.
No, I don't go to doctors. I think they're idiots and horrible.
Okay, well, that speaks for itself. I don't know about the camera, but I certainly have investigated a type of camera that's not doing what you're talking about, but it's basically a trick camera. It's a lot of psychic fairs.
Or is that
people have their aura photos.
You're talking about the Kirlian, right?
Well, it isn't Kirlian. No, this is an aura camera that takes a picture of you with, and what it's got is a built inside it is an array of colored lights, and they come up pretty randomly, and they create a kind of colored aura around your head. I was pretty sure that these were dubious when I was at one, so I immediately asked for a second picture, paid a second fee and got a second picture. They got a little nervous then, and of course it looked nothing at all like the first one. And of course you think, well, then what? Oh, your aura is always changing. In other words, just pick any random set of lights going off. And once I was able to get specifications about how these cameras were made, you could see that there was nothing to them. They're just basically a trick. You're not getting a picture of your secret aura, but you're getting an array of lights inside the camera going off randomly. The way they try to connect it to the body is you put your fingers on electrodes, kind of like the lie detector electrodes, and that's hooked to the camera. But all that's doing is just pretty much electrical impulses, just making the array different each time. And it has nothing to do with your aura, and is the color effects are produced by colored light bulbs. I mean, it's just amazing what people will buy at psychic fairs and the like. They'll pay their money and they have no idea. I would have to see the camera in question, and I would have to know more about it. I'm going to guess that camera is not available to be shown to any scientific organization and examined. I'm just going to bet that.
All right, back to the calls we go. Rick in Corpus Christi, Texas, east of the Rockies. Rick, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I believe in God because I had an amazing physical miracle happen to me in my life. But as far as Bigfoot, I don't believe in Bigfoot. I read an article about the guy that was in the, as you say, big suit. And I don't believe in little green aliens. But I do have a question. If we're dealing with a far superior being that has either figured out how to travel faster than the speed of light or bend space and time to get here to this earth, and with or without the government's assistance, are doing top secret clandestine operations, why do they leave their lights on?
Well, my point exactly, as I said earlier,
they're in the Phoenix lights. Yeah.
The Phoenix lights, I said, why would they come? These clandestine forces come to the planet Earth and hover over Phoenix. Not that there's anything wrong with Phoenix, hover over Phoenix with their bright lights on? What's that about? And the answer, I think, is that people are just caught up in the mystery, and I'm with them. I mean, I'm curious. So if there's something happening in the sky, I want to go out and look at it, and I want to know what it is. And I've, as I've said earlier, I've had these experiences happen to me. I remember once in California seeing a most incredible array of multicolored lights. I never saw anything like it before or since. But I kept standing there and eventually saw that it was an advertising plane. But I was seeing it at an, you know, at a, not the view they wanted people to see it at, but I was seeing sort of an edge view, and all I was getting was none of the advertisement and all of the strange light effect. It was something. If that had gone off somewhere, I would have been left pretty puzzled. And it's hard to track down something like that. It's hard to investigate and find out what all was in the sky at a given time. People think, oh, we ought to just be able to call up somebody and they'll tell us, nope, we didn't have a secret plane there in the sky at that time. But it isn't that easy. So these things we see, we misperceive them. We see things that are under odd conditions, maybe odd atmospheric conditions and so forth. And we don't know what they are, but they don't. Logically, we can't infer that, therefore, it's an extraterrestrial craft.
What would you like to happen to be real? I mean, would you like to believe that life after, there's my belief word for you again, but that life after death exists?
Sure, that's the big one. I mean, I think that that we are not alone in the universe is a wonderful concept, but we're probably going to never know that. But I think if we could live after we die, I think we would all be for that. It's just that why don't we have some better information on that thus far? We had the whole spiritualist movement, and we had mediums, you know, doing magic tricks. You know, some of that's still going on, by the way. I was at Camp Chesterfield in Indiana, and they were practicing these deceptions up and down the street, and I did an expose of them. We could talk about that another time, but I used my magician's powers to figure out one of the tricks that was being used, and people were being fooled. So why do mediums have to do tricks, or why do they have to, you know, do cold reading or any of the number of things?
And some do.
Now, when you make an appointment to a psychic, they have time to look you up on Facebook. No wonder they know all about you.
What do you think of Uri Geller? You've been a magician, so
don't get me started. I mean,
I am getting you started.
I cannot distinguish Uri Geller from a magician, and
could you do his same tricks? And I'll say them tricks.
I don't specialize in the spoon bending, but I certainly could. I have friends who could do, like the mentalist Banachek, a good friend of mine, and he does, in my opinion, he does the spoon and fork bending stuff far better than Geller ever thought of doing.
I can do the key bending pretty good, too. I've been practicing that.
Yeah.
And you can only do it, though, with keys that people don't need. Because it's pretty upsetting when you bend their car key or something.
That's right. It was interesting. I went to Lilydale, which is the world's largest spiritualist center where they talk to ghosts. I know people there. And I went to a workshop there where they were doing the spoon bending. And people were bending them in their hands. They're quite open about what they're doing. But what they're trying to do is convince you that you're not quite exerting quite enough force to actually bend the spoon, that it's somehow easier to bend. And it was really quite an interesting session in which people were kind of being urged to think bend while holding the spoon and going through sort of bending efforts. And people were just bending the cutlery, convinced that they couldn't have possibly been at that much by themselves. Really, people are just kind of strange sometimes. And I had a great time and wrote an article about it. And It's in our magazine. We look into things like that and go out and actually take a look at them.
You know, Joe, I do have to say that what you do, that sounds like Bernie Sanders again, that, you know, you do open up people's eyes to trying to get a little more proof and evidence of things, like Roswell, New Mexico, for example. Something happened there. I don't know what it was, but something happened there. Would you agree?
Well, as I said earlier, I think this was the Project Mogul spy balloon,
mm-hmm.
and pretty clear now that what happened, this spy balloon array, I helped the Discovery Channel recreate one of those Mogul arrays. We made it half scale because it's so gigantic, so many stories tall and everything. We created a balloon array, and then we had, because this is television, and television has to be entertaining, doesn't it? So we had a rifleman shoot it down and create debris. It was a great bit of fun. And then the believers there argued that it didn't look like the original wreckage field, and I argued that, well, it hadn't been blown around enough. But it's all these things are interesting subjects worthy of looking into. The Roswell one, if anybody wants to look and see me on a video, the Vice Media has put out a special documentary, has Stanton Friedman and me and Seth and others, but it's mostly featuring me. It's called The Real X-Files. And you can just Google search my name, and you might enjoy it for 20 minutes or so. We went to Roswell, talked to people, and I recreated some of the metal experiments in my lab and so forth.
Good for you. Let's go to Keith in Rochester, New York. Thanks for holding, Keith. Go ahead.
Mr. Norrie, if all of your guests were as honest and forthright as Mr. Nickel, going back to the days of Art Bell, Coast to Coast would never have made it on the air. And from a point of belief system, you have to know that's true. What Mr. Nickel does, and politely you don't, is you never challenge the belief system of your callers.
Correct.
Because you know they're the bread and butter of your show.
Mm. Well, but let me just say in defense of George, he's challenging them right now, having me on. So let's give him that much credit. I'm sure that if we had an entire show of just skeptics all the time, people would quit tuning in. There is a dynamic that happens. We put together with a production company once, our organization put together a show, and our founder, Dr. Kurtz, kept saying, I don't know why you're having these crazy people on. And we had to explain to him every time, as well, if you don't have somebody who's got a puzzle, a mystery, making some claim, just to come on and refute something that's not even been presented is not very entertaining, and why are we doing it? So you have a give and take. Of course, I think George should have me on very often, or have other skeptics, but he does.
And by the way, for Keith's sake, Keith, I let you on, for crying out loud.
Exactly, Keith. And Michael Shermer, you had Shermer on.
Oh, Michael comes on. He's been on quite a lot with me.
Yeah, and we're good friends. He's written book jacket blurbs for several of my books, and so on. So he's a skeptic, and I think we just need to have everybody lighten up, get out of being the true believer or the debunker. Let's bring forth claims, and yes, they deserve some looking at. The best claims should be looked at, and then let's let people do that, and then live with it. if we don't like the answer, well, then the believers have to look some more, and the skeptical investigators have to keep investigating. I think there will never come a time, George, I think there will never be a time that we will not have some kinds of mysteries that concern us. Some of them wax and wane. You know, Bermuda Triangle was once big, then it kind of goes away, then it the new generation comes up, somebody comes out with a new book, and we're back with Bermuda Triangle. But new things come up all the time. We both of us remember, of course, when there were no crop circles. Remember, they just sort of, well, cropped up, and there's nothing like them before. Now, after a lot of study, we think we understand pretty well what crop circles are. But it takes time, and as long as there are interesting things out there, I hope there will be investigators willing to take the time to try to look at some of the best of them.
Joe, I want to get that phone number out again, that you are making that free Skeptical Inquirer magazine available. One issue, right? Just one.
Just one, and it may be not the latest issues. You know, we have to look for where do we have some back issues.
You're going to blow your switchboard out. You know that.
We can give out, but it's we'll give you a free copy. 1-800-634-1610.
Super, and we've just tweeted that as well. Joe, thanks for being on the program and going that extra mile with us.
Thank you, George. Pleasure.
All right, up next, open lines on Coast to Coast AM.